Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking to our regular guest from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. Thanks for joining in with us, Michael Domke, the Director of Consumer Protection. Michael, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Glad to be here.
And Michelle Reinert, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, good to see you.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Well, as we talk with these two experts, I'm going to hope you join in. I'm going to talk with them about the top 10 list of consumer complaints. They get thousands of them, and they've got them all kind of organized into categories. We'll talk about that, the latest scams, and, of course, answer your questions. Maybe you have a consumer concern. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. That top 10 list, before we get into it, Michelle, how does a complaint get on the list?
Well, the way the list is compiled is we take a look at all the written complaints that we received in 2023, and then we break them down by the industry or category that they fall within. And from there, we look at the issues within each category. So it's all just about the numbers, how many complaints were received about what issue. And so the highest fall to the top 10.
Well, let's start at the bottom of the top 10, Michael. What was number 10?
And number 10 had motor vehicle accessories, and this can include anything from hubcaps to transmissions to carburetors to lug nuts. So big or small, everything's included in this category. And the most common issues we saw were deceptive and misleading advertising when promoting those products, the refund and adjustment policies if something went wrong and the company sticking to those, and then the defective products themselves or the company just outright not sending them. And so what we want to encourage buyers and consumers to do is pay attention to those terms and conditions when ordering those online, especially those really large and expensive parts, so you have some protections.
Yeah, it makes good sense. So motor vehicle accessories, number 10. Number 9, I think, also relates to motor vehicles, doesn't it, Michelle?
Yeah, we have a few of the motor vehicle categories this year on the top 10, but in the 9th place is motor vehicle sales, and this includes both new and used, and really our role in that partnership with Department of Transportation here. 233 complaints. The most common issues were about inadequate disclosures, deceptive and misleading representations, which we really look at a lot of advertising in our state. And then also we have regulations governing prize notice direct mail pieces. So we take a look at those complaints received about the prize notice, that enticement to get you in to take a look and do that test drive and consider doing that purchase, really. And this can be any kind of direct mail piece, prize notice or not, that we're going to take a look at.
So would it relate to something like, I see somebody in Facebook saying, I've got this car to sell?
Well, it's funny you ask that. That's a private sale, really, and be a private transaction. We might get a complaint about that, and it would go in this category, but that's very minimal in relation, because we are looking at those governed transactions as opposed to a private transaction between two parties, one not being, a regulated entity.
That makes sense. Okay. Well, Michael, let's go back to you. What was number 8?
At number 8, we have travel with 255 complaints. And travel can include anything from rental cars, hotel reservations, things like that. And most of our issues concern really billing disputes and failure to return the deposits and those payments, or really just unsatisfactory service throughout those transactions. And we want to encourage consumers, because these trips are important and you're planning them ahead of time, is do your research. Take that time to understand what the cancellation policies are, and also reach out to those businesses, ask some questions to make sure they're legitimate and you don't show up and all of a sudden they don't exist or it's not what you expected. And one way you can protect yourself from that is to look into that travel insurance. In case something happens on your end, you're protected and you get your money back.
Yeah, I think that travel insurance is probably a pretty good buy most of the time, isn't it?
Well, depending on what it covers and, yeah, you know, making sure you understand those terms and conditions of what types of arrangements you have to make in order to get those refunds and what types of coverage it'll provide. You know, sometimes you have to show that type of emergency or what that interruption was to make sure it qualifies. So understanding that will help.
I had travel insurance once for a trip to Scotland, the person I was going with became ill and couldn't go. And so I went to apply for the refund, and they said, well, sorry, you're not related to that person. You're exactly. just a friend. Well, that did me no good at all to have that insurance. Although if I had gotten sick, I would have gotten, of course, they would have covered that. But those are things within the contract. I hadn't even thought about the fact that the contract stated, you know, it had to be a family member, you or a family member.
Yeah, versus the party you were traveling with. And it depends if you book together or separate, too. How do they define the party you're with?
Yeah, a lot to think about when it comes to that. Well, where are we? We're at number 7, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Back to motor vehicles. So motor vehicle repair in this category, 352 complaints reported last year. And this is nearly a doubling of the number of complaints from the previous year. It's been on the top 10 in the past and has slid off due to other issues in his back. We've heard a lot about a failure to perform requested repairs, those delays in service, which I think we've all pretty much heard about, poor quality of work, again, those deceptive and misleading advertisements that can accompany this type of work, overcharges, and charges for work that's just not performed. So
yeah.
Here it's really important. Consumers should get an estimate in writing when they drop their vehicle off face-to-face, like sign a written repair order, and indicate, you know, how they want to proceed. They have a choice between three categories. Go ahead, fix it, no cost, or don't exceed this dollar amount, or
call if
don't do anything until you get authorization. And it's just really important that you're taking advantage of the rights and the laws that are in place to help you navigate through these situations. Because then what's next is documentation that says this is what's going to be done.
Yeah. I've had that happen where the repair shop called me and said, well, I forget the amount. You said, call if it's more than $500 or whatever. And then they explained to me what it was and what it would mean if I didn't do it. And I wound up saying, go ahead. But it was nice to have that protection, at least.
Right. It's that check-in. Because what if they'd come back to you and said, well, Larry, sorry, it's going to be about $4,000. You might say, well, is it time for a new car? You know, if your car's 15 yeah. years old, it's all going to depend. And it's a time for you to be able to evaluate the situation.
And in fact, that's what happened in that particular case. I wound up getting a new car. I got another car. I wasn't going to spend all that money on that car. Christina in Glenwood, we'll go to you. Hi, Christina.
Thank you. I received a $100 gift card. It has a $45 balance on it. I had to leave town for a month and a half to help my family. And when I returned, I learned that the natural store became a food co-op. And they are telling me that they can't accept the card. Do I have any recourse?
Michelle, what do you think?
You may not. You know, if a card is purchased from a particular store, it should be good at that store. And gift cards can't expire for a period of time. And they may have depletion, deactivation fees, if you will, or inactivity fees, I'm sorry. But if a store is bought and changes companies, it's not just sold as that same store, but is sold and becomes a new store, there's nothing that guarantees that they will honor or accept gift cards from the previous store. So you may be out. Maybe there's another store of that kind in another community that you can shop online and use it. But if it was a sole standing entity, you may be out that money. So we really encourage people to use gift cards as soon as they get them for various reasons, one being companies go out of business and change hands.
Yeah. At the same time, if you're a new company and you're selling the same product, might for $45, you might say to the person, you know what, we're not supposed to charge this or let you have this, but we will anyway to get your business in the future.
That's right. That's one tactic that store could use. That's right.
That's and then Christina would probably tell all her friends that. There you go. Christina, I'm sorry about that, but I like your advice though about if there's a company or another store of the same company, the original. It's a good idea to
Check, see if you can shop online or if you're if it's in a town you travel to or going to, or can you sell it or give it to a friend who lives in that community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go, Christina. Thank you so much. You can join in too, by the way. Complaint, question, I hope you'll join in. The number's 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Michael, let's go to number six on that top 10 list.
Number six is medical services. And we received 380 complaints about these particular issues. And those include billing disputes, which is oftentimes what we hear about, but also the representations made when the services are being provided, or just outright unsatisfactory service with how that was transacted. And what we want to point out here is this isn't necessarily the type of care you're being provided, but really it's the medical services and how they're being charged and what's being represented and things like that. And we also want to remind consumers about in 2022, there's a new consumer protection laws went into effect against surprise billing. And what that did is it protected a patient from getting an unexpected balance after they received that care from an out-of-network provider. And so it really helped add a level of transparency for consumers before they receive that care, because as we know, medical services are very expensive, but also at the time, very necessary. So we want to make sure that they understand what they may be charged for and what those services include.
Yeah, it can be a nasty surprise if you suddenly see, I owe $20,000 for that one day that I was in the hospital with,
It is, and this law and the protection also really helped add a level of protection for uninsured patients. You know, so mm-hmm. often we talk about health insurance and the benefits it provides, but there's a population that don't have that benefit. And so this also helps give them an understanding of what they may have to pay out of pocket for that particular care, which, like we talked earlier, with those vehicle repair, may be a decision point on whether you move forward.
Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection are guests today as we talk with them about consumer scams. We're going through a top 10 list of complaints and talking about that with you, but you know, you can join in, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking consumer protection issues today with our guests from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Michael Domke is Director of Consumer Protection. So great to have both of them with us today. Again, call us at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Going through the top 10 list of consumer complaints that the department received over last year. And Michelle, number five, I thought it might be higher up on the list, but
it did drop us. Well, it's in its spot, you know, where it was before. Identity theft, 459 complaints. Those have decreased a bit from last year. But this is one of those categories that the number is a little misleading, in my opinion, because unless you are taking measures to monitor your identity, you may not know you're a victim of identity theft. So this could be a very underreported number here. The driving factors that we've seen are online account takeovers being the most common issue reported to consumer protection. And we really want consumers to take this time to protect themselves. We talk about this pretty regularly, and I will mention that it is Identity Theft Awareness Week this
year,
right now. Mm-hmm. We are in the midst of it. So if you don't listen to us in October when we talk cybersecurity, at least take some time right now and grab those new devices that you may have gotten over the holidays and make sure that they have some privacy protections put in place, some password protections, you're using two-factor authentication. But also remember, it's tax season. We are right there starting tax season here. And tax-related identity theft is a real issue and also receives its own batch of complaints. And that's the misuse of your Social Security number to have taxes filed in your name or for someone to have had employment using your number. And both of those things you can find out during tax season because you go to file your return and you're either told you haven't claimed everything, there's this job over here you've forgotten to claim that you didn't know you had, or there is the fact that an identity thief has gotten to your refund before you have by filing taxes in your name. So be sure that you are filing as early as possible, but taking those preventative measures now and year round to never store your Social Security number on any device, install a mailbox lock or use a P.O. box to secure your mail. And if you're getting your W-2 by mail, get out there early. If you don't have those things, make sure you're the one receiving your mail. Destroy those unneeded documents that contain your personal information. You know, get that micro-cut shredder or go to a shred fest and get rid of the documents that way. And then, you know, related to taxes specific, sign up for the Federal and State Identity Protection Personal Identification Number, or the IP PIN. This is an added layer of security for tax filing, and we really want to make sure that people use all the tools that are out there to protect your identity and then help you monitor it as well.
I just got my last statement that I needed yesterday, the last possible day of the month.
You are on top of it.
I was ready, you know, I thought, come on, hurry up, send that so I can fill out my... So what's that IP? Explain how somebody gets that number.
So the goal of the PIN program is to keep refunds in the right hands and out of the pockets of fraudsters, and this becomes your personal identification number, so when you file your taxes, you need to have that number with them. And so that's another piece of information an identity thief would need to be able to obtain in order to be able to steal your tax refund from you by filing false taxes. So you can get that number from both the IRS and the Department of Revenue by going to their individual websites to obtain that number. So you can go to irs.gov to receive the number, or you can go to dor.wisconsin.gov.
Maybe we can get those up on our page. IDs at WPR.org.
Oh, you know what? I have that website wrong.
Well,
for the Department of Revenue. I think it's revenue.wisconsin.gov.
Revenue.wisconsin.gov.
Yeah, we'll verify and make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, you can join us. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Looking forward to hearing from you. We have lots of people coming online. But there's a line open for you, and I hope you'll join in. Or email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. And, Michael, you've got the word here on the address?
Yep, just to make sure we get those listeners where they need to go, it's revenue.wi.gov.
Revenue.wi.gov. Well, that's pretty straightforward.
It is.
Yeah. David in Phillips, we'll give you a chance. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning. I just had a question about the security systems that you can, like, apply onto your devices. I get a notification of that, like, from McAfee or other ones, but it's where I can barely trust if it's the real thing or if that's a scam in itself.
Yeah.
Well, David, we hear a lot about these types of issues, but both on computers, laptops, and of course, mobile devices. And the recommendation we have is if you think there may be a concern, don't respond to that particular pop-up or any notification that you receive. Reach out to, whether that's McAfee or Norton, at a trusted source that you know. And that means going on, searching the website, finding it directly, and then calling one of those phone numbers that you know was on one of the sites. Where we see consumers getting misled and victimized is when they respond to those pop-ups with calling the phone number that's promoted or clicking on a link that's in that message, and then they get rerouted to the scammer. So if you do subscribe to any of those services and you think maybe your subscription did expire or there is a problem, just go ahead and contact them directly at a source you know is trusted.
Yeah, makes good sense. David, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Michael in Kakana next. Hi, Michael.
Hey, hi, good morning. My wife and I had a situation where the tax preparing software company, their software was hacked. It wasn't their fault. It was their software had a security flaw. And it took many months to resolve and several years to get our refund back. It was unpleasant. We've locked up all our, and then not only that, they use that information to steal a lot of money from a bank account. They had all our information from the tax preparer. So it's not just taxes, that they were able to use that information to infiltrate our bank and steal $20,000, which we were able to recover because of fraud. But it was very, very unpleasant.
Oh, good. Michael, thank you. Michelle, a comment?
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely right. Your taxes contain a lot of information, and if they get at the software aspect, there's even more there because there's an interconnection. If you make an electronic payment or receive an electronic refund, you do have bank information tied there. Your social security number is contained with there, your employment information. So he's absolutely right. And it's working with and feeling confidence with your tax preparer and knowing what they do to secure your taxes beyond that software piece. But what do they do for their systems and having that conversation? I appreciate what Michael said. It wasn't their fault. You know, they were doing their things. Things do happen, but validate how they do try and keep things secure.
Remember somebody, this is some years back, a woman who called and actually, it didn't have to do with the tax preparer, but somebody got into her bank account because they, you know, some way or another, anyway, they took all the money out of her account, and then she had a $3,000. You could borrow $3,000. They borrowed the $3,000 too. So they took all her money and then borrowed the maximum that they could borrow out of her account. It's terrible, terrible thing.
It is something we also see tying in with bank accounts is oftentimes lender financial institutions will offer that kind of backstop where if all of a sudden one fund gets short, you can pull from another one to cover that so you don't get a improper fee. And one of the risks we see with that is when scammers get access to one account and they drain it, that gives them access to another one and they continue to pull it. So little things to think about and make sure you stay protected.
Yeah. Join in. Questions we'll give you get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, or maybe you have an experience to share. Email to ideas at WPR.org. We're continuing on through our top 10 list, making pretty good progress. Actually, Michael, what's number four?
Number four is telecommunications, and we received 642 complaints, and this includes kind of your cellular and your internet services that are being provided. And most of the concerns we hear about are billing disputes and the connection and disconnection issues, or maybe the failure to cancel those subscriptions and services whenever they ask for it, and then also the refunds and adjustments for when those services aren't being provided. And what we want to recommend is contracts are really confusing. We talk so much about how important it is to get things in writing and understand terms and conditions. But in this area, it's really important to understand what type of service you're signing up for and what representations are being made to you when you're getting it. Most often, we get so accustomed to faster and faster and faster service, but here in Wisconsin, we have the benefit of the beautiful Northwoods. And sometimes you want to expect to have those types of speeds and services that you get down here in Madison, you know, up there at the cabin. What's important here is to just understand what representations are being made. you know, we at DATCAP can't necessarily help with those speeds that are occurring at the time. What we help with is, what did they tell you you were going to get, and did you get it? And those are the issues that DATCAP can help with.
And you can always test. You can do your own. There are ways to test the speed of your computers. My case, we had, when we were COVID times, we had to broadcast from my house, and so our tech guy person here said, "Oh, you can check that easy to see if you're up to the speed." And I was not getting what I was being, what I was paying for, and I had to, and so it got resolved. I mean, they changed it right away, but I was at a much slower speed than what I was supposed to be getting. Let's put it that way.
You're absolutely right. The same thing happened in our households during COVID, and we just needed to make sure we could both operate during the day as we needed to, and come to find out it was our own equipment, causing that, because it was so old and outdated, and you don't think about that. Yeah. They'd done their upgrades, but it still wasn't getting in the door at our house. So, we had to do our own upgrade. They were able to help us identify where the problem was.
Let's turn to number three on the concerns list. So we're getting more and more complaints here as we go up the line. And what was number three, Michelle?
Number three is home improvement. We had 867 complaints with issues related to a failure to provide services and materials. And that failure to honor warranties, again, some deceptive and misleading representations. You can see that's kind of a common theme through many of these, as it's a major area that we look at across all consumer protection. Poor quality of work, billing disputes, and incorrect charges, improper installation, and a failure to properly disclose lien waivers. I want to spend some time on the lien waiver one, because this is a really big protection area for consumers. So a contractor, when entering into a contract, is supposed to disclose and educate, inform the consumer in writing that they have the right to receive a lien waiver. But it's that consumer's responsibility to assert that right. So the consumer has to say, "I want a lien waiver," when they make a payment. I don't, if it's a first payment, a middle payment, so whether it's down payment, last payment, subpayment, whatever term you want to put with it, you give money, say, "I want my lien waiver." You can do it when you sign the contract. But again, when you make the payment, say it again, but you have to make that statement and then get that. And this lien waiver is there to protect you should something fall off the tracks with a subcontractor, paying a supplier, paying even the contractor making a claim about payment. So it's a really fancy receipt is how I try to boil it down for people. But it's a great protection when we've had some cases with contractors that haven't paid suppliers and subcontractors. It's protected consumers in their properties
So those subs could come to you if you don't have a lien waiver and say, "Hey, you owe us.
We did work on your job and it amounted to this much and contractor didn't pay us. You're obligated." They can put a lien on your property for payment. They would have the right to file a lien in order to get their payment. And so this protects you from that because you can demonstrate that you made that payment, and it's really the contractor's obligation.
A lot of good home improvement people out there, but as I look at our neighborhood emails, or our neighborhood site, the Sassy Neighborhood, it's amazing how many complaints are noted there about this very thing, home improvement, things that weren't done or paid them down and then they never did anything, that sort of thing. And they should they be getting a hold of you?
Absolutely. I mean, there's going to be disputes about whether or not that's the right shade of the paint that you selected, and that's a quality of work or workmanship issue, which we can help mediate, but we don't have any regulatory authority over those issues. But certainly, if you have a dispute about what's being delivered based on what's in the contract, a contractor has started a job and disappeared or fallen off, or they aren't starting a job and you have a contract that has a particular start date and you're not getting anywhere, These are all things that consumer protection can help with, and you should, you can, and I'd say should file a complaint with us.
You know, I think we've broken a record here because we've talked for 35 or so minutes, and we have yet to give the toll-free number or the email or the address, the online address. So better do that now.
Absolutely. You can call Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128. And you can go to our website for fact sheets, presentations, to file a complaint directly online at datcp.wi.gov. So that's datcp.wi.gov.
And the number is 1-800-422-7128. Here's another number for you, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us. I'm surprised we usually get lots of emails, and we don't have any emails right now. We got some callers coming online. 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. What was number three on our list of or did we just do that? We just did that. How about number two, Michael?
And number two is telemarketing, and we received just under 1,300 complaints in 2023, which is a slight decrease from 2022. And these complaints concerned robocalls, which are those phone calls we get probably every single day letting us know that telemarketer or potentially a scammer are calling us, phishing and spoofing attempts, and imposter scams. And those are all methods in which these malicious actors are trying to get our personal information or financial accounts. And one thing we can do to at least minimize some of those calls is register on the Wisconsin Do Not Call Registry. And that'll add your phone number and it'll help deter some of those. And that can be done at nocall.wisconsin.gov. Again, that's nocall.wisconsin.gov. And we really like to take a minute to emphasize, you know, these telemarketing calls and really the scams that come with them, because phishing, which is similar to what we know about, it's casting that line out there with a little bit of bait and seeing if anyone will take it. These scammers do the same thing with these phone calls and texts and emails and say, are you willing to give me something you don't want to do, but I'm going to try and trick you into doing so? And it continues to be one of the most common ways that victims fall for these scams. So it's important to understand how they're being done and what happens and what goes with it. But we also like to touch on what we're seeing, a growing use of artificial intelligence in these scams.
Yeah.
And AIs being used to make them more convincing, and a little bit also using it to kind of spread the volume of these scams and calls that are going out, which is making it harder and harder for all of us who are receiving them to know what's real and what's not. You know, David called earlier about those pop-ups and saying, is this real, isn't real? Well, that's a common thing that we're hearing about. But we also want to take a minute to highlight, you know, some of the things we're doing that the government's doing to try and stop that and offer some more protections on what's going on. And we talked about Operation Stop Scam Calls, which is an initiative that was done to really by the federal government and in collaboration with all of the states and the District of Columbia to crack down on these unwanted calls. You know, they're representing billions of phone calls that are coming into all of our devices, causing interruptions and really scamming our consumers out of millions of dollars every year. And so we want everyone to recognize that things are being done. There are initiatives that are being successful that we're participating in and really holding these businesses accountable.
Good for that. Glad to hear that. Ruth and Altoona, will go to you now. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. We had some windows put in and some good windows put into our house. And we went with the recommended installer that the business had, thinking that, you know, they wouldn't recommend somebody who wasn't good. Well, we were really unhappy with installation. He didn't put in insulation. He left gaps in the windows. It was just really a bad situation for us. And we had Focus on Energy come in later, and they were able to show us that the insulation hadn't happened. So one of my recommendations, if you're going to have something like windows done, is have Focus on Energy come in prior to the window installation and after the window installation, and let the person putting them in know you're having that done, so that you have a way of holding them accountable.
Yeah, that's a good tip, Ruth.
Yeah, it's a great tip, and making sure if that's part of the package, that it's part of your contract with the installer. And I know you purchased the windows yourself separately and hired a contractor. What exactly were they going to do as part of the job, and being sure there's a written contract that covers that and any details, you know, trim installed with it or not, and colors to be used, all of that. And maybe you also need a building permit in your municipality, so an inspector is going to follow up after to be sure that the job's done to code for your municipality as well. That could be a step that happens depending upon where you're at.
Yeah.
And I feel Ruth's, you know, issue. Michael's laughing. I also recently had windows installed, so I know of what she speaks.
Wow. Yeah, well, you should be reminding anybody that comes to do work on your place that you are the administrator of the of the division.
I don't get to do that, Larry.
Oh, you can't do that.
No.
I suppose not.
I just have the fortune of at least knowing the law and my rights very well. So.
Okay. Ruth, thank you so much for that comment. Let's go to Gary in Fort Atkinson. Gary, hi.
Hi. Hi there. In this case, it's a plumber that did some really shoddy work and actually broke things and then padded the bill to increase the, you know, payment. I paid most of it, but I didn't pay the last $300. Is he going to file a lien on my house? I mean, he's done everything else wrong, so.
Michael?
Well, Gary, the question I would have is, did you request those lien waivers when you made those initial payments throughout the project?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, that certainly is one protection. If you haven't made final payment yet, that you could ask that plumber for and give yourself a little bit of room there. But also, it really depends on what representations were made when you guys had this agreement. Breaking items and then is something that we can't necessarily help out with. However, adding those additional charges and increasing that bill on what you initially agreed to and making you kind of responsible for additional things that weren't agreed upon in that contract is something we can help with. So to your question about whether he can file a lien or not for those types of things, it's possible. But there are certainly some variables that we'll take into account when that would be potentially filed. But I would encourage you to give us a chance to help mediate that between you and the plumber and see if we can get this resolved without it getting to that point.
Yeah, and to do that again, he can call.
Sure. Give us a call at 1-800-422-7128, or you can visit our website at datcp.wi.gov and file a complaint online.
Yeah, it's a fairly simple matter to do, although you want to be specific in your information, certainly, but it's not a hard thing to do.
It's not. We have an online complaint portal that will walk you right through the steps and will help you remind of what information is gonna that we need to get your complaint moving quickly, so it's painless.
Yeah. So it's painless. Gary, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke of the Division of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests today. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer protection issues here on the Ideas Network with Michelle Reinert, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke is Director of Consumer Protection within the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection for Wisconsin. We have some callers online. Let's go to Lee in Green Bay next. Lee, hi. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hi. This topic would be recalls with the automotive manufacturer, the one being Toyota. I've got a Toyota Tundra. There was a recall. You get a card in the mail. The frames were going to heck. They were rusting. They were crummy. You know, poor steel. I brought my truck in. They inspected it. They took the box off the frame. They power washed it, and they undercoated it. They said that it wasn't bad enough to put a new frame on, which they did for some of the customers. My question is now, I still have that truck because this was way back in 2012. I don't drive it in the winter because I don't want it in the salt. I see where some of the undercoating is cracking away from the frame. Can I still hold the manufacturer, Toyota, responsible if I start to get really bad rust spots in that frame? And one of them is a cross member that has the brake lines on. And if you lose that cross member, you lose your brakes.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, Lee, this one is going to really come down to the dealership that you took it to who made the repairs and whether or not they affirmed to the manufacturer that it was completed to the specifications of that particular recall. So it's going to be difficult because if it's starting to rust out and then it becomes a quality of work on the repair for that particular recall is a separate issue. But if the dealership told Toyota, yep, we fixed it, and also keeping in mind that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in conjunction with the manufacturer, in this case Toyota, would identify what the proper fix is for that issue. So if they said that power washing and the undercoating was the remedy and it met that specification, that may be all that needed to say that that recall was fixed. And now these reoccurring issues, because we live in Wisconsin, don't fall under that realm. However, the quality of work to do so may be another avenue that you could explore. I don't know that you could necessarily hold Toyota responsible for that. You might want to start with the dealership and how they fixed it.
Yeah, that's the place to go, Lee. Thank you for calling. Good luck. And, well, say he doesn't get satisfaction, he wants to file a complaint, he could still file a complaint.
He can. If it's a warranty issue that was covered by a dealership, those complaints should start with the Department of Transportation's dealer and agent section. They have some authority over those warranties and how those are done with the manufacturers. If resolution isn't found there, certainly reach out to us at datcp.wi.gov, and we'll also attempt to mediate.
Lee, thank you so much for calling. We have another Lee, this one in Door County. Lee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how you doing? My question is, you were talking about lien waivers earlier. And when you're dealing with general contractors, it's fairly easy most of the time to request lien waivers and get them from the subcontractors. And even if the general contractor supplies some of the material, to get lien waivers from them. But I was wondering, how do you deal with situations where, for example, we had a lot of new windows put in, and when you ask for lien waivers from various manufacturers, sometimes the response you get from the general contractor is, we can't get those.
Michelle?
Well, so we're indicating under the Wisconsin Home Improvement Code that you get the lien waivers from the contractor, and the lien waiver is for payment to them because that's who you're responsible for payment to. And you're right, they can extend beyond, and you can get additional ones from subs and suppliers, but in some cases you won't. You're going to want to get the warranty information about your windows from that. And you know, we're making a distinction between a home improvement contract and a new home construction contract as well, where there may be a large general contractor, but you may be having a major renovation done that's still going to fall under a home improvement code where you're going to have one general contractor doing oversight of all this different work. But again, we're in the lien waiver category with your main primary contractor.
Okay. There you go, Lee. Thank you for calling. Richard in Two Rivers, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, the other day I had my identity stolen on my debit card, and the thing went, they called me that night, and they said that I had one charge through Amazon for $1, then I had $4 and something cents for an escort service, and I had $36 and something cents for a escort service again. And I was wondering, my question is, could they have gotten my information from Amazon, because I order a lot of things from them, and if I'm going to give them my new debit card number, I want to be careful.
Richard, given how widespread our presence is with our information in all different areas, it's often difficult to pinpoint exactly where some of these compromises come from. We also talk about how scammers don't necessarily try and get all the information in one swoop. They'll piece it together from different areas. So it would be difficult to say, yes, Amazon was the source for this particular compromise. Because I'm sure that debit card has been used, you know, in different areas. So all of those provide vulnerabilities, which really is unavoidable because we have to pay for things and, you know, this convenience of that. So I can't say that Amazon is responsible for it, but I also can say, if I can make a quick pitch, that if you do find out that that card was compromised, certainly you want to reach out to them to get the card number changed, change your passwords with your financial institution in case there was a more widespread compromise there. And then also take a quick look at your credit report to make sure that the information they may have used with that institution wasn't compromised on other accounts.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd want to definitely get to checking your credit with with one of the credit agencies.
You do. And since we got a minute here, I'll take a look.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to make a quick pitch, too. If you're encountering that in anyone else that may have found just those breadcrumbs of what appears to be a breach, especially with your financial institutions, is you want to place a credit freeze with all three of those reporting agencies. It's free. It's quick to do. And what that does is it prohibits anyone that has your information from opening new lines of credit with that. It's a great security blanket to help stop further widespread identity theft if you find there's a little bit. And then also, the federal government recently provided a opportunity for consumers to get free credit reports once a week. And that's a really, really great tool that I would encourage everyone to take advantage of, because that also can be a telltale sign of how it wasn't just your one debit card that was compromised, but there's a little bit more going on and those chargers are showing up with other cards, and you can help stop that bleeding.
Yeah. Richard, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. Kathy in Afton, Minnesota, your turn. Hi.
Oh, hello.
What's on your mind?
I have a very unique situation, and I've inquired with the local attorney general and the FCC, and nobody seems to have an answer. I had to buy a lot of things online this fall for the holidays, and I got everything was shipped just fine. I don't do a lot of online shopping normally, and I got a little package shipped through UPS, and it was a little tiny package all taped up with Amazon tape. And there was no receipt, no return address, nothing. And it was just a little funky, little goofy Christmas ornament inside. And the key is, it was my correct address, my correct last name, but a different derivative of my first name. So I looked at the tracking number under UPS, and it had originated somewhere on the East Coast and gone through several different changes in tracking. So I basically threw it away. Well, then a few weeks later, I got a package with the same name, my address, and it was from a company that sells horse supplies and something I didn't order. And I opened up the package, and the first and last name of the person that ordered it was the same name as was shipped to me, but she was in New York, the state of New York. So I took it back to UPS, and what had happened was the original shipping label for UPS was correct, and it was on there, and there was a receipt in the package to her, but somebody had put this new shipping label with my name, my fake name and address over it. So I took it to the UPS driver and explained. I didn't want to call because I didn't want my phone number out there. And since then, I got two more packages from the same horse company and another box. And luckily, I caught my UPS driver a couple weeks ago dropping the packages, and I explained it to him. So he knows not to deliver them to me with this bad name. He knows my real name.
Well, what is, you know, what's going on here, Michelle? Do you have any idea?
Well, at first I thought this was going to be an example of what we talked about, boy, a number of years ago now in 2020, called brushing, the brushing scam that was going out there where individuals were receiving oddball things in their name from places they had not ordered it. And what we tracked that back to was, so people were setting up profiles to get reviews. So you'd have these fake reviews and increase a review comment with the company. And so then I was, as she was continuing with the story, well, is there a sale of marketing and is there a fake profile being set up? So check your credit report, change passwords, take control of your identity and protect it that way from other things. And you can return these things. If the horse company is a legitimate company, I'd call them and tell them to discontinue this and cut this profile down. If it's legitimate, if you are confident it truly exists, and there's a phone number you can call in a physical location. If when you do a search, you don't actually find them, I would just continue to reject the packages and still change your passwords and be sure that you are checking and monitoring your credit report, but update your profiles and accounts online.
Kathy, there you go. A strange situation, isn't it? Appreciate your call. And we'll be continuing with our two consumer protection experts right after we take a look at the news. In the meantime, if you want to call in, you can. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And we'll be back right after this quick look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about consumer issues with our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michael Domke and Michelle Reinen. Excuse me. Do you need advice on how to handle a consumer problem? Maybe you got scammed, you think? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Camille in New Berlin, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you very much for taking my phone call. I received two letters from Wells Fargo stating that I was entitled to compensation for fraudulent claims or fraudulent accounts that were made in my name. And that I called them in November, and the totals are over $5,000 in two different claims that they have sent letters to me. I'm wondering, do I have to get a lawyer for this? Or, and if this is what they're admitting to, would it be in my best interest to consult with a lawyer? I'll take my answer off the phone if you have no other further questions for me.
So two for $5,000, two complaints, and Wells Fargo is going to cover it. I wish you'd have stayed
on.
Yeah,
I think this is part of the larger Wells Fargo settlement and actions that they've had a number of years ago, and they are probably still doing analysis and contacting customers, or it's their ongoing monitoring to make sure, because there had been fraudulent accounts opened in people's names as part of that larger practice that they had a while back.
Yeah,
so
that's a while back.
As to whether or not she's, you know, has to have an attorney, I imagine no. If she wants to consult one for her own, you know, confidence and in that she's doing so, that she probably could certainly consult with one. But, she, you know, inquire based on the letters, see what they send. If it seems overly complicated, you know, then in what she's waiving, then certainly consult with one.
Camille, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Phil in Wanakee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Phil.
Good afternoon. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know if this has anything to do with what you're all talking about. I didn't tune in until about 20 minutes ago, but I get texts, you know, telling me the package can't be delivered because, you know, you have to text us back, give us something from your address, and And I always normally just block the caller and just delete it. But should I be saving that phone number, passing it on to somebody else for somebody to follow up with? Because it comes, at least twice a month I get these.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think?
Well, first, let me thank you, Phil, for deleting those texts and not responding to them. That's exactly what we encourage everyone to do. And guess if you're getting those repeated text or phone calls from the same number, we would encourage you to file a complaint with us and let us know. We do have a fast track complaint that'll make it even quicker and easier for you to share those phone numbers with us. And it's really important to let us know that is happening, because even one phone call can be that one thread we need to start pulling and pulling and pulling and get to the source of who's sending all those phone calls and texts and attempting to scam everyone out of their information. And it gives us an opportunity to look into it and hold them accountable, which we've done several times. And those can start with one phone call and one complaint. So yes, let us know.
And it's you can call at 1-800-422-7128. Or I guess you could do it online, too.
You can do it online at datcp.wi.gov.
There you go, Phil. Thank you so much. Dennis in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. I had a deck installed about 7 years ago. Bought the materials through a local building supply that's Wisconsin-based. And since it was installed, it was professionally installed by a builder, and the deck boards are cupping, which means they're retaining water. And this time of the year when it's freezing and thawing, it gets ice in those cup boards. I filed a complaint with the building supply company and sent them all the pictures and everything, and they said it was installed wrong, and we corrected what they told us we needed to correct. But everything that we've done, they continually come up with an excuse that it's not covered. But they won't send anybody out. They just do it by pictures. They won't send a representative out. Even though it's a Wisconsin-based company out of Eau Claire, they won't stand behind their product. What can I do?
Michelle?
Well, now seems the time that you could file that complaint with Consumer Protection and help us try and assist you through this process. You've taken a lot of different steps and measures and walked through what they've asked of you, and you're not, you're getting responses. They're not in the likings of what you are desiring, but we can step in and see what kind of answers we can get about what that warranty coverage should be on that and help them explain and define more specifically why it's not being covered, if that's the case, and see if that's in line with their warranty. And that might involve the Office of Commissioner of Insurance as well. So again, file that complaint. You can do so online at datcp.wi.gov or call the hotline at 1-800-422-7128.
Please do, Dennis. Thank you very much for calling. Mike, who's in a semi, traveling along. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm out in the boonies. Yeah, I wanted a background check, and I looked on my phone for a free one, and I found a free one, and so I gave them all my information. At the end of it, they asked for a credit card number because it was a 99-cent charge. And I figured, oh, what the heck, so I did it. Anyways, couple days later, I looked at my bank statement, and they charged me $29.99.
Well, this would be one, Michael, for...
Absolutely, Mike. I think this may be a situation where we can help. If they told you that it was just 99 cents and that's what it showed, and they didn't charge you that, certainly reach out to us at datcp.wi.gov, file a complaint. We'll reach out to that company on your behalf and ask them why there was that discrepancy in those billings and hopefully get you an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's datcp.wi.gov. If you're driving along in your semi, you might not be able to remember that, but it's pretty simple. datcp.wi.gov. Or could he call on that one, the 800?
Certainly. Yeah. You could give us a call at 1-800-422-7128. 1-800-422-7128, and any one of our hotline team members will be happy to take that complaint or help it get it filed for you.
There you go, Mike. Thank you so much. Rick in Monona, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I'm really happy that you're having this program today because my family and I have been hit with these emails and text messages lately that tell us that what the first one said that thank you for resubscribing to something I'd never heard of before. And I got really nervous. I thought, well, what did I subscribe to? And then I looked at the return address of this thing, and it was a Gmail account. And then it had this, if you have any questions, call us. So I was really worried, and I called the credit union and made sure that nobody was taking money out of our account to pay for this. And then since then, we've received two more of these things. One of them that looked like it was the post office that said that they had a package that was undeliverable and they needed more information about our address. And then yesterday, my wife got one that said that we bought $600 worth of Bitcoin. And I think that this is the latest scam, and I think what they want is you to call them or return the email. And then I'm not sure what happens after that, other than that they've got you on the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Michelle, Rick is correct there, isn't he?
Rick is correct. These are some really good examples of different phishing emails that are out there. You know, we've talked about the shipping scam, so that's the post office one trying to entice you to give information so you can get a package, a subscription, you know, oh, renew that, it's time. And people have subscriptions and lose track of which ones they have and renewals, and it's generic enough. I love that he spotted it's from a Gmail and isn't actually connected to the company that he was supposedly subscribing to for whatever service or item. And then a Bitcoin, something that's enticing. You've purchased this. Oh, I did. You know, maybe the spouse did and you didn't know and you're losing track. So you're going to follow up to get the details. But they're all means of what Michael said earlier with the phone call of, you know, casting something out there, giving you a little bait, trying to lure you in to handing over what they want, personal information or your money. Just, you know, the best advice we have for these are don't engage, don't click links, delete them, put them in your junk folder, you know, block them from future, but don't respond in any way, shape, or form or click anything because some can be loaded with malware and you don't want to get those viruses onto your computer.
Rick, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Number to call, 800-642-1234, if you have a question or concern. Ted in Superior, thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I have a question. When someone passes away, should the credit bureaus be notified that that person and their Social Security number are, you know, I'm kind of worried that, you know, they could use a Social Security number of someone deceased to start fake accounts and stuff.
Yeah, Ted, you absolutely want to let all three of those bureaus know that that person has passed away so that they can block that number for being used in the future. And then also, if you haven't, make sure you reach out to the Social Security Administration and let them know what had happened and so they can flag that in their system.
Yeah, that makes very, very good sense. Thank you, Ted, for calling. Appreciate it. And most of us will have to go through that at some point or another. We'll be responsible for that for somebody. Mm-hmm. Family member, probably. We've got almost to the top of the, in fact, we are at the pinnacle of the top 10 list. And we have one more, the top complaint received last year, Michelle, was, ta-da!
Landlord-tenant issues. So 2,208 complaints with disputes between landlords and tenants that couldn't be resolved. And, you know, this is a pretty emotional topic. It's someone's home. It's someone's investment. You know, it's two sides to that coin. Certainly both have a very strong interest in things going well. Common issues reported surrounded security deposit returns, evictions, unauthorized entry, inadequate disclosures at the time of entering into the rental agreement or renewing that, promises to repair that weren't honored, and that service piece of it. And when we're talking about security deposits, really it's issues about not receiving one. You know, it goes off the radar. You don't get it in a timely manner. Maybe a part or all the security deposits being withheld, and you're not told why, or you are told why and you don't agree with the amounts withheld or the reason why it's withheld. So a lot of pieces there and nuances to this kind of relationship. We have a lot of educational material in this area because it is such a high volume category for individuals. We have a landlord-tenant guide on our website. It's about a 14-page document, I think, that consumers can learn more in depth about their rights and their responsibilities. But on the flip side, same for landlords. They can learn their rights, but their responsibilities as being a landlord or a property manager there. And then we have a rights and responsibilities short consumer fact sheet as well. We do free presentations for both parties in regards to this topic. And it's something I really encourage people before they rent, while they're renting, if they're about to leave rental, to take a look at these materials, because there are tips in there about ways that you can help secure, you know, the return of your security deposit, a good method for checking into that rental property, and things you're going to want to know to just assert your rights and know what they are. And when I say assert your rights, I'm not saying, oh, be all demanding about it, but no. Know the law, and it will help you navigate the land better.
Dennis called to say the caller with who had the 90 supposed to pay 99 cents but wound up getting charged $29. Dennis called to say that caller should contact his credit card company right away and contest that charge with a credit card company as well.
Yeah, great call by that. I love it. That caller knows. Dispute it with the credit card company. That's another way. But for us, we want to get at why it's happening, what misreps out there, because this might be happening to many more people.
Yeah. Before tax day, we have Valentine's Day coming up. What's the latest on romance scams?
Well, what we're starting to see is artificial intelligence being used to make these romance scams more convincing and difficult to identify. And one area that it starts with is traditionally we would make people aware that the pictures being used may not actually be the person you're communicating with. And so we would encourage them to do a reverse search with that image and see if it pops up across the internet, where in one area it says that that's Larry, in another area it says that it's Michael, and that's a red flag. However, now AI is being used to generate those personal images. And that's making it very difficult to do that reverse search and see if it's being used across multiple platforms. The other area that we're seeing AI being used is in scams where they're continuing to have these conversations and making them more widespread. It's making it tough to understand, am I really talking to this real person? Am I not? And because so much information is being put out on these profiles, these are being engaged through these dating apps and profiles, it's easy to cultivate all that information and create a fake profile, making these scams being more widespread. Very difficult to identify.
Yeah. Jody in Brooklyn has something. Let's go there. Hi, Jody.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mine's a bit of a different from what we've heard earlier. It's about finding a good lawyer. I've had the unfortunate experience of having otherwise for some very important and tragic things in my life, and I know that the bar association list is all the lawyers that are listed on there paid to be on there, and I'm very frustrated with lawyers.
So how do you pick a lawyer?
Yeah, we through our Ready Reference Guide and the Consumer Protection Hotline, we can't recommend one over another or make that, and we certainly don't rate them, and we're not the entity to evaluate their conduct or actions and take complaints against them, but that is the bar. So we do send people to the Wisconsin Lawyer Referral Service and have them seek out lawyers from that. Otherwise, I guess it's recommendations from friends and family and others who've needed to use a lawyer. Michael?
I was going to say the same. The Bar Association will have that opportunity to review a little bit of that list, but reaching out to trusted members that you know that can provide a recommendation, who had a good experience, and maybe seeking out if there are some apps or websites that provide a little bit more insight as to who was good and wasn't.
Jody's from Brooklyn in the close to the Madison area, and I know Madison Magazine, for example, does a yearly evaluation or ratings of attorneys across a broad range of topics, like the ones that are considered the best by other lawyers, for example. And I think Milwaukee Magazine may do the same thing, and so there's some publications that way that are divorced from the attorneys, but get these evaluations that are probably a little more, you can be comfortable, a little more comfortable with.
That's a great point, Larry. You also see some industry publications that do the same thing, that'll publish the top 100, top 200 in that particular field and where they are. So great place to start.
And it's often the lawyers, other lawyers are saying, who in your mind is the, who is he or she the best one for a particular area? So, Jody, that's you. You might just go online to Madison Magazine and check their put in lawyers suggested, because they do it for doctors, they do it for lawyers. I know Madison Magazine does, at least, and I bet Milwaukee Magazine does it too, and probably some other ones. So, thank you so much for that call. Boy, we're running out of time here. We're getting some scams relating to utilities. You can't turn your utility off in the winter, but there were some scams that typically come up, if I'm not mistaken, in spring.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see the winter utility scam come because these temperature fluctuations, and we have a moratorium here in our state that allows us to prevent disconnections. And so as soon as we're going to hit that time frame, we're going to see those scammers fly in. They're going to threaten and try and trick people when we get back to the cold temperatures, right? Mm-hmm. This week we have some nice seasonal warmth here, unseasonal warm temperatures. But when we get to those colds, these calls will start flying where they pretend you're your utility company and they're going to threaten disconnection unless you make payment. Watch for that bizarre payment method. You're going to know that it's a scam there, and they're going to not want you to check things out, but they'll have lots of tactics there. And then we'll see it as soon as the moratorium ends on April 15th as well. And another seasonal one we hear about is Publishers Clearinghouse. It's that time of year when we're all used to the commercials coming with the giant check and the balloons and the star coming on the doorstep to win the big money prize. Well, there's some legitimate Publishers Clearinghouse. We've talked about a settlement with them a few months ago. But the fake side of this scam, usually around the spring, is you've won the truck, you've won the big item, but you need to pay all these taxes and fees and delivery charges in order to claim your prize and get it delivered. But this one impacts people because everyone wants to win. Yeah. So just hang up on this.
And on that happy note, we are out of time. Michelle, Michael, thank you both so much for being with us. We'll look forward to another visit.
Sounds great. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke. Michelle is administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke, director of Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back. On Garden Talk tomorrow, Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston are back to talk about the effects of the heavy snow and fluctuating temperatures on our landscape. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.